Let's do this.
What is virtualization?
You're going to learn today.
Innovate like a startup. Deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeeed up and ready because it's going to be a great day.
I know you're going to dig this.
Oh, yeah.
You're listening to the Virtually Speaking Podcast with Pedro Lero and John Nicholson.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast, episode number 4. My name is Pete Fletcher, a.k.a. Pedro Arrow, and joining me as always is your friend and mine, Mr. John Nicholson. John, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great.
So how's life as precinct chair over there in Houston?
You know, I think my dog actually respects my authority a little more than he did last week, so I got that going for me.
You know, I was binge watching House of Cards and I kept replacing Kevin Spacey's face with you, you know, as you're just doing all these, you know, horrible abusive things to you know, win power over this precinct chair. So,
you know, in that small room of four people who happened to be there too late at the voting, you know, I saw an opportunity and I seized it. And although I was a benevolent dictator, I did hand out fancy titles for everyone, including making my wife secretary, which I think she really did not enjoy having to do all the handwriting.
Well done, well done. All right, well, listen, today is going to be an exciting day. We've got a guy that I've actually interviewed a few times on other podcasts, but Alan Renouf, yeah, he's a product line manager for various products. We'll talk to him all about that, but if you've ever done anything with Power CLI, he's one of those names that come up. He's on Twitter at Alan Renouf. He's got his own blog at virtue-al.net, and he is better known as the uncrowned king of Power CLI. Alan, welcome to the podcast, buddy.
How's it going? I have to say, that is the most professional startup sequence I have ever heard on a podcast.
Oh, that's not good, because it only goes downhill from here.
Glad to be here, guys.
You know, I only have one problem with your blog. It's virtue-al.net, which implies that there's some virtue there, and I don't know if I agree with that.
That's fine. You know, if you get no virtue there, that's okay. Plenty of people do.
Well, I mean, I think Vice Al was already taken, so
yeah, that's probably true. Awesome. Well, Al, yeah, before we start diving into what you're doing at VMware, I wanted to bring on one other gentleman to the podcast. He's one of our teammates. He's focusing on virtual SAN. He's certainly one of John's peers. You can find him on Twitter at Jace McCarty, and his name is Jace McCarty. Jace, welcome to the podcast, buddy.
Hey, I'm glad to be here. I wanted to get on a couple of the earlier podcasts, but just unfortunately haven't had an opportunity yet. But this should be a really good one. You got a really good guest, and I'm happy to join.
Yeah, we're glad to have you on, and I'm sure you'll be coming back on to talk about some more virtual SAN goodness in future episodes.
Absolutely.
Jace, you are the really good guest. What are you talking about, man?
No. You are the star here. I'm just augmented. Right? I was actually asked to be part of the podcast so I could heckle, technically.
So it's Alan and his sidekick, Jace.
give a little evil laugh there.
John, we just got the title of the episode, Alan and his sidekick, Jace.
Yes, I'm saving that now.
So, Alan, I know you do a lot of work with Power CLI, but when I was looking at your title, you're the product line manager of APIs, SDKs, and CLIs. So that extends to a lot more than just Power CLI. Why don't you tell us about it?
I am the product line manager of acronyms. Literally, yeah. I cover more than just CLIs nowadays. A product line manager means you cover more than one line. So I cover the APIs, and more specifically, the core APIs that come out of vSphere. So, you know, vCenter and some of the other surrounding products. And also the SDKs that work with those APIs, and the CLIs that also work with those APIs.
Okay. How many different CLIs do we have out there?
We have more than you would think. And it depends what you call a CLI, right? We have a lot of different commands that work with our infrastructure that are meant for tiny little things. But what I would define as a CLI is probably more of a combined set of commands that work together to perform different tasks. So if you count that, then we obviously have Power CLI, which most people are familiar with.
Sure.
That's the more Windows-based CLI tool. And then we have something called vCLI, which is more for the Linux guys. So that's essentially a bunch of Perl scripts, but also includes ESX CLI, which comes with ESX host, but also as part of vCLI. And it also includes something called DCLI as well, which is meant for our newer features in 6.0 or specifically tagging and content library.
Man, and exactly when do you sleep? That seems like a lot of work.
You have no idea, honestly.
Wow.
I kind of context switch all over the place because moving from APIs to SDKs to CLIs, there's a lot of work to be done in each one of those. And we've got some cool stuff coming out as well. So I'm excited about the future.
Awesome. Well, before we get started, there is a rumor I've heard, and I need to get the answer on this podcast officially. Are you or are you not PowerCLI man?
I am not PowerCLI man.
All right.
That was some hesitation again.
It's like the Clark Kent thing, isn't it? You know, you never know, really, do you?
I really thought you were going to ask if he was French.
I'm just saying, if you take the contacts out, it'll
expose you. Or
if you go onto Vimeo, right, and I will send you a link for the show notes where I am actually on stage at VMworld, and PowerCLI man comes on stage and stands next to me, and I have a conversation with him. So how can it be me? Is all I'm saying.
Yeah, that's true. That makes sense to me.
Didn't we have Tupac singing at the awards in 3D? I mean, come on. There's obviously play.
You know what? I haven't got the budget like you guys to come up with some really sophisticated startup. So I definitely haven't got the budget for the holograms.
Well, even if you have the budget, you wouldn't have the time to execute it, right? I mean, you're too busy with
exactly
all the ways to get in and control the environment, separate from just the UI.
Correct.
Exactly. All right. Awesome. Well, listen, I want to talk about PowerCLI, but before we do, one of the words that I've heard so overused and abused, and I've heard so many different definitions of this word that it's kind of annoying. And so I'm going to consider the three of you subject matter experts in this space, and I am going to consider your definition authoritative. So I would like each of you to tell me, what is your idea or definition of DevOps?
And how long do we have to do this?
Oh, boy.
No, I mean, like you said, right? It's one of the most overused phrases of the last couple of years. Everybody seems to have DevOps in their title, or they do DevOps, or they're writing books on DevOps, or they have a tool that's called DevOps, or they, do something DevOps-ish, right? Which term do you want me to use? I think you end up finding the term that means the most to you, and then you use that, right? I mean, does it mean that you suddenly start treating your virtual machines or your products as cattle rather than pets? Does it mean that you work closer with the people that actually support your products as a developer? Does it mean you work closer with the developers as somebody that supports a product? It just means so many different things to so many different people. I wouldn't even like to try and understand what it means. I think that some of the principles that are behind the people that call themselves DevOps, moving faster, definitely treating virtual machines like cattle in the way that some of these guys produce applications now, making the applications more aware of what's going on and talk to each other a lot nicer. I agree with some of the principles. The name, you can call it whatever you like.
Okay.
I have to agree. And, quite honestly, I'm tired of getting emails, from random vendors that say, hey, we want to sell you some DevOps. Well, really? I get those and I laugh and I think about the time when I was a customer it was a combination of using what you had in conjunction with the capabilities of what you had that, people don't, typically extend to and doing more with that, right? So it's a combination of all those different pieces. It's not just, necessarily using canned off-the-shelf type stuff, but really making it your own and really applying it to the business processes and profile, that you're trying to align with for the particular business you're part of, right? So it's, just like Alan said, it's a little bit of all of that kind of rolled into one. And you may not necessarily use every bit of that, but, a combination thereof, to have a good, quote, DevOps strategy, if you will.
Yeah, you're right. And I think, you know, I think you've just said something and I'm missing a trick, because I think my next CLI I'm going to bring out, I'm going to be calling DevOps CLI.
Nice.
Oh, gosh.
Everybody's going to buy it, right?
Oh, yeah.
Gives you DevOps.
It's the hottest thing, DevOps CLI.
I think you hit on a problem we've often had, I think, with VMware. Some of our best products, not enough people talk about because no one makes any money on them. The free automation and management components, you know, that was always what was described to me way back in the days. Orchestrators was the greatest thing VMware had that you've never heard of because no one makes any money on it.
Yeah. VMware's right. Best kept secret.
VDevOps. That's what it's going to be. VDevOps.
VDevOps. There we go.
Well, what about NoOps? I mean, that's actually what I've actually heard more interest in, is in terms of automating the operations processes to the point that you don't have ops.
Yeah, that's a great theory, but that means that means developers have to wake up at 3 a.m. when something goes wrong. You think that's going to happen?
I think I remember seeing Pat interviewed on theCUBE, and that was his quote, you know, DevOps is 80% driven by operations people because developers do not want to carry a pager.
Exactly.
Yeah, I have to agree. You know, I think about the days when I was, you know, when I was a customer and you know, there was this one application that would literally fail all the time. And I would get, you know, just paged constantly. And of course, you know, you've got that, you know, your own call for the week, that type of thing. You're carrying the pager and you know, either that or you have the on-call phone, which is like this, you know, big suitcase looking thing from the late 80s, you know, because they didn't want to upgrade it, that type of thing. And then, you know, you finally rope a developer, you know, responsible for the app, you know, along at some point, and then you finally get frustrated and you forward every bit of email that you get from an alert perspective over to their mailbox, and then finally somebody says, hey, wait a minute, this looks like it might be a problem, right? It's all about the ownership, right? And I really think that operations typically has that ownership more than the dev side does.
You were doing DevOps, Chase. You forwarded your emails to developers.
Oh yeah.
And you're working tighter with your development team.
and their bosses. I mean, oh man, especially when you get, you know, when you get pages between, you know, 11 p.m. and 3 a.m. every night, and you can almost schedule it, you know, that type of thing. It gets to the point where it's a little ludicrous.
All right. Well, listen, let's talk. I know that there was a recent release, I think it was Release Candidate 3 that came out for Power CLI. But before we unpack that, I'd love for you to give us sort of an introduction for those of us that are not familiar a lot with Power CLI. Maybe you can give us a very brief sort of explanation of what Power CLI is and what it is mainly used for.
Sure, no problem. So let's start with PowerShell. So PowerShell itself is actually a scripting language that was written by Microsoft, but it's different to most scripting languages. The one thing I think they did right with this one is they made it easy to use. Their target audience was not the developer. It was not the guy that sits a bash shell and works out how to script things in a very complicated way. It's not somebody that traditionally knows how to program. Their target audience was the system administrator, the guy that wants to get his job done. So that, I think, was fundamentally different about PowerShell in a scripting language. It was the kind of thing that you don't normally do, right? You base it towards people that understand for loops and for eaches and, you know, all this kind of stuff. So what they essentially did was they put a very powerful tool back in the hands of the administrator so that they can do their job, and they can do their job en masse. So Microsoft did a great job of that, and you know, VMware often competes against Microsoft, but I will be the first person to tell you that Microsoft did an awesome job of that. And so what we did is at VMware, we produced something called Power CLI. Now, Power CLI essentially is a bunch of commandlets that you can add into your PowerShell session that expand your PowerShell commandlets and allow you to work with VMware environments. So it's essentially taking all of the knowledge that you have on PowerShell, as I came into Power CLI, I actually didn't know anything about PowerShell. I started using Power CLI because it was a great way to interact with the VMware environment and extract information and automate information that's in there.
So you actually started with Power CLI and then learned PowerShell?
I did, yeah.
Interesting.
And I actually see a lot of customers do that. You know, I get a ton of people come up to me and say, you know, I learned PowerShell because of Power CLI, because I needed that easy way and that automated way to work with my environment. And the easiest way I found to do that was through Power CLI. So I learned PowerShell through that.
I'd have to agree. I did as well.
There you go. Point proven.
So yeah, Alan, I have to agree with, you know, kind of the target audience for PowerShell and kind of the way we've done things with PowerCLI. And it's, I mean, it's really easy to use, whether it be just, you know, running GitHelp or, you know, Git commands, you get a list of commands, that type of thing, and the examples that are typically included. You know, it can get to the point where, depending on how a particular, you know, property or object is returned, that type of thing can get a little complicated. But, you know, in general, it's one of those, you know, the language is basically get this that matches this and do this to it, right? So it's really pretty straightforward as far as, you know, the mechanism, the way the, you know, the language works itself. So I highly encourage anybody who's not, you know, is not using PowerCLI today, at least, you know, and PowerShell for that matter, at least in some capacity, you know, become a little bit familiar with it, because there are so many things that you can do with it as far as you know, moving very quickly and making changes. Like, you know, when you've got a very large vSphere environment and you need to make one little bitty change across 50 hosts or whatnot, it's a lot easier doing it through a script with PowerCLI than it is, you know, through a having to do it through a GUI or having to log into each host and that type of thing, right?
There's a couple of things I want to pick up on that you just said. And that is, you know, what back when I started in IT, I was, you know, my first IT job, I worked my way up through the help desk and then I became in charge of some of the servers, right? And that was back in the day when you were in charge of like two or three servers per admin. That doesn't happen anymore. You know, admins are now working on hundreds, thousands, millions of servers, right? You're responsible for a heck of a lot more. I don't remember signing up for that, by the way. You know, that just kind of happened.
Do you get paid by the server?
I don't remember getting a pay rise for that, right? That just happened. It's expected of you. But yeah, you're right. The idea is you're not seriously going to go through the GUI and make a change to every single host or every single virtual machine because a KB article says this is how you fix this one issue for the virtual machine, right? You're managing thousands of these things. You're going to find a more performant way to do that. The other thing that I wanted to pick up on as well is you said that the you know, some of the good things about PowerCLI were the examples and the help files. And I completely agree with you. You know, one of the great things is that when you do a get help on a commandlet, you can actually see some examples of how you might use that commandlet. And we actually take a lot of pride in producing those examples and producing those help files. I can tell you that I probably get emails on average, you know, two or three times a week that I forward on to our help team that update those files so that the next releases that come out have better examples or have more examples, or the documentation that we produce actually has that extra information in there. So it's definitely, nice. You know, it's one of those areas that, again, makes PowerShell and PowerCLI so easy to use, because the amount of times you have to come out of that shell and disrupt your workflow is minimal because you can see the information right there.
Yeah, absolutely. So my first exposure to PowerCLI and even PowerShell for that matter was when you guys released a few years back the support for SRM. I was focusing a lot on SRM and started looking into ways to automate some processes inside of SRM using the PowerCLI. And so it's very intimidating for someone like myself that's not a developer. And so I kept thinking, ooh, this is, but you said it earlier, this is focused on the administrator. And so there's a lot of great examples out there that you can steal from. You don't have to reinvent the wheel here. There's so much good information out there. And so that's what I did. I went out there and I found some really good examples on how to use the SRM commandlets in a way that I was able to just make a few changes. And then, boom, I was able to have some really, really fancy automation inside of my SRM environment.
You're right. The thing I always say when I stand up at VMworld is the best script you'll ever write is one you stole from somebody's website.
Yeah.
And it's not even stealing, right? Because the reason we put this stuff out there and we share this stuff is because we know that other people are hitting these issues. You know, the community that has been built around PowerCLI and PowerShell is absolutely huge. And it's full of people that just want to help you. They are not going to say to you, oh, you idiot, you don't know what you're doing with PowerShell. They're going to help you along. They're going to say, hey, you know, there's a better way to do that. Or have you thought about doing it this way? Or maybe you don't know how that works. Let me help you out here. It's full of people like that, whether it's Luke Deakins, whether it's Jeffrey Snover, who invented PowerShell. I still see him leave comments on blog posts that say, this is a great script. You know, here's a different way to do it. These guys are just, you know, seriously interested in helping other people out.
That was my introduction to PowerCLI, was being like, this is a great script. I'm going to steal it. But one thing I know we talk about, you know, being able to scale the fan out ratio of, you know, going from three servers to managing thousands. The other side of that is consistency, because I used to manage a help desk. And the problem was, if I asked someone to, hey, I need you to go update this server, do this one server, you know, it's pretty easy to QA check behind it and do that. But when you need, when you, you know, legitimately, let's say you did have a small army of, you know, red shirt tier one help desk guys, and you said, hey, I need you guys to go run this command on 2,000 servers. Someone's going to, you know, fail to connect to a server. You're going to end up with that command will not consistently be applied, as opposed to doing things programmatically. And that's part of, I guess, was part of the promise of, you know, NoOps or DevOps or whatever you want to call these movements around moving more towards automation work, is that you will get better consistency. I don't even view it necessarily, the time savings is definitely a piece. And there's nothing worse than being like, hey, we have to try this command, fix this problem because this KB. And then finding out that command actually makes it worse, and you now have to go back to 1,000 servers and remove it. But it's the consistency of application and the self-verification that can be built into that. You can get that output and say, okay, if it failed, and then you can even have that script say, well, if it fails, then try this, or abort, or do this. And so that's really the thing that excites me about PowerCLI.
Well, I think that the DevOps guys are actually taking that one step further now. It's not just about a script that you write, but it's actually about a self-healing system, right? It's about these next generation configuration management tools, things like Puppet, Chef, or even Microsoft's desired state configuration. The fact that I have my infrastructure written as code, and if you don't think you look like that, tough. You need to change your opinion. You need to rectify yourself so you do look like that, because, you know, that's the single source of truth. So I think, I agree that the tool sets that we're using nowadays are moving forward, and they're making life easier to enable things like DevOps and NoOps as well.
Yeah, why don't you do a quick explanation and maybe a little plug on that? I know Luke Deakins did a great demo, and he's got a good blog out there on using desired state configuration with vSphere.
Yeah. So desired state configuration is basically Microsoft's configuration management tool. So essentially there is a agent that runs on a box. Now, if that's a Linux box or if that's a Windows server, it will sit there and it will run. And what it will do is it will check itself against the configuration file. So it will say, you know, do I have these services installed? If I don't have these services installed, install them. You know, are they started? If they're not started, start them, right? And it goes out and it does this. And what it does is it won't go through and install these services every single time. It uses something called idempotent actions, which basically means if you're already installed, then just skip it, right? You're already in the desired state that I require. So, you know, don't do anything. But if you're not, then install it. So it's essentially saying that, you know, this single source of truth that I have that I can check into GitHub, that I can use versioning tools on, that I can work with, you know, take this single source of truth and make sure my environment looks like this. And this is really what enables that, you know, cattle versus pets, in that you really care about your pets and your virtual machines, and you give them names, and you log into them, and you fix them when they're sick, and you make them healthy again. Whereas a cattle, you know, if it's not working, you kill it. So this is really what enables that, because if you think about it, when you kill that, you don't care, because you know that your infrastructure as code will notice that that isn't there and rebuild it exactly the way that it should be. So there's less troubleshooting, because you actually know that that is the way that it should be configured.
Right.
For those of us who came from VDI, I mean, that whole notion of this desktop's bad, in Vue, delete it. Composer will build another one, you know.
Right.
You know, it's even, you know, from, and there's things beyond configuration, also things like security of, you know, why is the firewall off? Well, we can't turn it back on. Maybe that's infected. You know what? Shoot it. We'll rebuild it anyways.
Exactly. Yeah, it applies to a lot of different areas. I think it's a great working practice.
Awesome. All right. Well, this is a storage and availability podcast, and we wanted you to come on and talk a little bit about PowerCLI as it pertains to storage. And so I know that in version 6, I think that was the first version of PowerCLI that you really started to offer support for things like SPBM and vSAN, some commandlets within vSAN. And that was version 6. I think we're at 6 release candidate 3 now, right, Alan?
Yep, correct. 6.0 release 3.
I'm sure you get those mixed up. You've probably got like five different versions that you work on in your head.
Exactly right, yeah.
So put your Release Candidate 3 hat on for us, if you will.
It's on.
And tell us a little bit about what's in Release Candidate 3.
Sure. So what I want to do is actually focus more on 6.0R2, 6.0 Release 2.
Sure.
And I'll tell you why. So 6.0R3 was more of a bug fix release and a release that we introduced the ability to give us more intelligence about what you're doing. So it actually gave us some phone home type abilities so that when you install 6.0R3, the first thing that comes up is something that says, hey, you know, we would like to send some very basic data back to VMware. Are you okay with this? So I'll jump. That's the only things that were in 6.0R3, to be honest with you. You know, I mean, it's great that you should always install the latest version. I always recommend you install the latest version because we have great backwards compatibility. So with 6.0R3, we actually support all the way back to vSphere 5.0 update 3, I believe. So, you know, you should always install the latest version. It's got the latest bug fixes, the latest performance enhancements, and the latest command nets to allow you to work with it better. But let's more focus on 6.0R2 because that was the one where we introduced more features.
Okay.
So one of the things in 6.0R2 that we've done is anybody that knows anything about PowerShell will know that PowerShell itself moved away from something they called snap-ins as a way to distribute commandlets into something called modules, which is basically a drag and drop thing, right? You can take your modules, you can drag and drop them onto a new machine under the Windows PowerShell folder under modules, and then suddenly you've got a bunch of commandlets that will work. So you don't have to install this stuff anymore. So it's a lot easier to install, and it enables things like quicker updates. It means that you can go to the PowerShell gallery and you can download them. It enables that kind of apt-get type thing that the Linux guys have had for a long time.
Sure.
You can now just do install-module and grab those modules that you need straight from your session. So we're not there yet. When we started out very early in PowerShell. We started out with snap-ins. So you have to run through an MSI, you have to install PowerCLI on your machine. What we're slowly doing is moving towards that modular infrastructure and moving our snap-ins over to modules. So a lot of the work that has been done in 6.0R2 has actually been moving towards that. And as part of that release, we've converted the license snap-in that allows you to work with various licensing areas, and also the vSphere Update Manager snap-in been converted over to modules, making it one step closer towards that fully modular aspect of PowerShell. The next thing that we did, which was pretty cool, is we actually enabled you to work with vRealize Operations Manager. So there's two main things we did here. The first thing is we opened up the entire API. Now, if you're an expert on PowerCLI, you'll know that what we normally do is we open up the entire API and we give you a PowerCLI view of that API. You said you'd worked with the SRM stuff, right?
Yep, it's exactly what we did there. Yep, mm-hmm.
That's exactly what we did there. We give you access to 100% of the API, but it's harder to use, right?
It sure is.
It's not the high-level commandlets that people want, right? And by high-level commandlets, I mean the new-VM or, right, you know, new-recovery group or whatever, right? You know, but it does allow the people that know what they're doing to abstract that harder stuff into functions that look like higher level commandlets. So it's, you know, and what it also does is it gives us the building blocks that we need to build those higher level commandlets. So we covered everything in the API. Great. You can do anything that you want, but you need that extra knowledge. What we also did is we took some of the key use cases that we saw and gave you commandlets to work with Operations Manager. So you can take your output of getVM, which obviously gets a list of virtual machines, and you can pipe that into getOM metric, and that will go to Operations Manager and get the metrics that Operations Manager sees for that virtual machine and report those back to you. And then obviously you can make decisions based upon that. You can say, you know what, this VM is running a 110% of its CPU. So let's give it another CPU, right? So you can then pipe that through to a set VM number of CPUs too, rather than one, right? So, you know, we're kind of giving you the ability to call some of the Operations Manager functionality that you need whilst opening up the entire API as well.
Okay.
So that's a huge thing. There's a lot of use cases that I can think of in my head. that I haven't had time to write scripts for. But there's a bunch of stuff we could do with Operations Manager right there. So, you know, I'm really excited to put that in there, and you'll see more and more stuff come out from us. And I've got some scripts that I've written that I need to find time to blog as well. The other major area that we worked in as well was the host hardware information. So I see a bunch of different people out there saying, you know what, I constantly have to go to the hardware compatibility list to check my to check the hardware that's in all of my hosts,
right,
to make sure that when I update to the latest version of vSphere, it's still going to work, right?
Yep.
And at the moment, it's like, okay, I have to go to the host through the UI. I have to go to that tab that lists all the hardware in there. I have to list the hardware. I have to write that down. I then have to go to the HCL. I have to look at the HCL for each one of those individual components for the version that I want to update to. And I have to see if my environment is still supported. And as we said, when you're working with hundreds of servers, that's a pain, right?
Oh, yeah.
So there's two commandlets that we introduced in the 6.0R to version of Power CLI. There's get VM host hardware that gives you basic host hardware, things like the manufacturer, the model, the serial number, the asset tag, the BIOS version. And then we have another commandlet called get VM host PCI device that gives you more information about the actual PCI devices that are installed in that host.
Okay. Can you
That could be really useful for like vSAN in terms of looking at what those, as we got flash devices or we're concerned with things like QDEPs or setting on PCI Express cards. There's a lot of value in being able to interrogate those devices.
Heck yeah.
It's funny you should say that, because a script that I wrote recently that Duncan Epping actually goes out there and uses these new commandlets to get a list of the hardware, and then it actually goes to the HCL, or actually the JSON version of the HCL that we have published, and it checks your hardware to see if it's compatible with vSAN.
Oh, so it'll cross-reference the HCL?
Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic.
There's a hidden JSON file out there that we use for the health check plugin. And so, yeah, that's awesome. Your script can check that. In fact, I'm actually needing to use that, because today I was talking to TechOps. One of my clusters that I just inherited, the RAID controllers are not showing up in out of band, so I don't even know what they are. And right. I'll definitely be deploying that to find out what's going on there.
Yeah, I think this is also really helpful for those customers that are seeing all the greatness that's coming out with vSAN. And are like, you know, I would love to take vSAN and deploy it in my environment. What do I need? Do I have what's needed in my servers? So they can essentially run this against their existing environment and see if some of their hardware that they've got already is supported via vSAN. And then essentially, you know, throw a few hard disks in there and get up and run it.
Nice.
I think one of the great things about it is and something that I used for years as as a customer, you know, was the virtual script, you know, daily report, right? I would use that quite often, and we could very easily roll some of those, you know, some of those capabilities into that, right? Where you get a daily report that indicates across our entire farm if anything has deviated from compliance, right? As far as the latest HCL. Because when it goes and pulls that HCL, that particular script, as I understand it, goes and pulls it for that day. And we're constantly updating that, right? So I think it's a good indicator as far as showing, you know, the ongoing health of your environment based on either what version of vSphere you have, what type of hardware you have, what the settings are, you know, because we may, you know, from a virtual SAN perspective, we may have different recommendations for particular hardware at different times with, you know, whether it be a particular update. We've realized that, hey, if you're running this version of vSAN, you probably want to make these setting changes, you know, that type of thing. Right, so we could very easily leverage some of that to ensure, you know, that we've got a virtual SAN install or multiple virtual SAN installs operating as healthy of a state as possible. Right, if you think about environments where, you know, whether it be small shops or shops where they may only have one or two people that are ever in the web client actually looking at the health check, you know, they may not necessarily notice, you know, and it could be that it's not something part of their daily routine necessarily, go and check the health check interface within the web client, but that particular script could make it very easily where they could get that report and look at it at any time, right? As the environment changes, right?
So yep. For those of you wondering what Jace is talking about, he's talking about a script called vCheck. Google vCheck, and it's the first one that comes back. But essentially, it is a script that goes out there and checks your environment for a bunch of issues or known problems and gives you a report back. You know what? just to geek out for a second, because, you know, I'm constantly looking for ways to geek out. Maybe a PM, but, you know, I'm still a scripter. You know, what I think it would be cool to do exactly what you just said. You know, I could see the ability of a plugin in there that actually checks your environment and says, and, you know, says to people, hey, did you know your environment is ready for vSAN? You know, by checking the HCL and coming back with these list of things that are in there. I think, you know, it's a great idea, Jace.
Good, good. Well, you know, I think as you know, as vSAN, as you know, as far as API, you know, as additional APIs are exposed, that type of thing, I think that we could probably expand even further to where, you know, if maybe not necessarily if someone says, hey, you know, every day am I compatible to run vSAN, but for those people who have installed vSAN, then yeah, maybe we'll add different things like, hey, you've got some VMs that are not compliant with the storage policy that's applied, yeah, or, you know, different things like that. You know, let's say you've got a stretch cluster and at a particular time you witness some latency or whatnot, you know, between the you know, witness and secondary side or something like that, right? So as more and more APIs, you know, especially with 6.2, which we announced in February, and we've publicly stated that this could be available sometime here in March, I think as more of those APIs are exposed and maybe further down the line with maybe a future release, hopefully, hint, maybe, Power CLI will get a lot more of those commands exposed. I mean, I'm just asking. I don't know what's happening. I'm not involved in your stuff. I know what I would want as a, you know, as a former administrator, you know, storage guy, virtualization guy. I would certainly hope, you know, that we add some additional capabilities, you know, as far as that goes.
Yeah,
and I can already tell you that some people have already put plugins in there for vSAN. So actually, you know, if you go check out the vCheck site, you can get to the GitHub repo and look in the plugins folder. There's already a bunch of plugins that are in there that do exactly what you said, right? They check your vSAN environment, they check the, you know, storage policies and stuff like that. So yeah, it's a great idea, and I look forward to that expanding in the future. As for the future release and the command notes, I couldn't possibly comment.
Sure.
Well, no, I'm not saying anything about any future releases. I'm just saying that's what I would ask for.
Watch that space, as they say.
Yeah. Thanks for asking.
That's what I would ask for, right? You know, and that's one of the things I really like about what, you know, what Pedro and John and myself, you know, what we do kind of as TMs is not only do we try to show, you know, customers and partners how to use this stuff, but we also like to bring information back to you dastardly PMs and say, hey guys, we want this. And you know, quite often you guys, you know, are like, well, you know, you don't really want that. Yeah, we do. We want that. So absolutely. I think that the capabilities we've got, you know, hopefully coming are going to be really awesome.
I love it when you guys do that, by the way. The more feedback I get, the better.
I'll leave a link on the show notes, but for those of you listening, if you went to github.com/AlanRenouf, you can find the vCheck and about a half a dozen other contributions that Alan's given to that community.
So, you know, continuing on a little bit from the enhancements that we have, we just spoke about the host hardware information.
Yep.
We also have some storage enhancements as well, you'll be pleased to know, as this is a storage-based podcast. We have some commandlets for working with VASA, so they, you know, the VMware vSphere API for storage awareness, because we couldn't think of a longer name. There's some new commandlets in there that allow you to work with VASA providers to retrieve the VASA storage array and work with those.
Okay.
Now, are those generic, specific to all the different storage vendors as far as VASA goes? And kind of with that, how does that tie into like virtual volumes? You know, because virtual volumes
suck.
Sorry, go ahead. Sorry,
I knew that was coming.
I was trying to squeeze that in, but
yeah. So what we've done is basically exposed some of the VASA related information that we see. It's not specific to a vendor; it's more specific to what we can retrieve and working with the VASA providers. Yeah, to be honest with you, I don't have the great details on those commandlets because I don't have an array to work with them. So, yeah.
Is that a request for all storage vendors to send arrays to Alan Renouf?
Yeah, I'll give you my address, right? as well as that, we have some commandlets to work with NFS 4.1 as well. So, you know, working with specifically the user's side of NFS as well, and being able to define what they are and add those in there. And as well as that, we have some great commandlets we're working with Bio. And these
Sony
are basically...
Sony Bio?
Yeah, Sony Bio. That's correct, yes.
No, VSphere APIs so, for Bio, yes.
Yes, that's right. I'm glad you know what that means. So what this basically allows you to do is add the filters in. So you'll get the different filters from the vendors. And then you'll be able to use Power CLI to install those and see where those are and work with those filters.
Okay, so I have a question there specific to, and you know, obviously this is a storage podcast, but are there any vendors that routinely, you know, we routinely integrate with as far as API or data gathering or us providing data, you know, back to an array or whichever way, whether it be upstream or downstream, whatever, specific to APIs around storage. And I mean, I know that we, you know, a couple of us primarily focus on virtual SAN and vVols and that type of thing, but, you know, let's open it up to storage in general. I mean, you know, are there any particular vendors that have some interesting things that you've been involved with specific to, you know, APIs and SDKs around storage with vSphere?
Oh, there's a lot of them out there, right? I mean, we're not the only guys that are producing PowerShell, for example. I mean, EMC have some PowerShell commandlets, Dell have some PowerShell commandlets, HP have some PowerShell commandlets, Pure, you know, you name the storage vendor, NetApp, you know, they've all got PowerShell commandlets because they realize that this is the best way to integrate your products on a programmatic level. So, you know, specifically for PowerShell, yeah, I would definitely say there's a bunch of storage vendors and hardware vendors and, you know, products out there that are PowerShell enabled. You know, I mentioned Microsoft and VMware, but, you know, if your storage array doesn't have PowerShell commandlets, then move storage arrays.
Agreed.
Wow.
Yeah. No, you know, I would be as bold to say that. But there's a lot of integration that we do with a lot of different vendors through APIs, through SDKs, through CLIs. Probably way too many to mention.
Jace, you just recently wrote a blog post on virtual blocks, right? About using the sparse swap files, right? Using PowerCLI?
Yeah, so I, as I was writing some of the documentation around the 6.2 release, and John and I had some conversations with Christos, the office of the CTO, and quite a few other people. And one feature that we had a quick little conversation about was sparse swap files. And basically, virtual SAN itself will go in and create in every version up to 6.2, including 6.2, when it creates the virtual swap file, and I'm not going to go into the details of swap files themselves, but when it creates it with an object space reservation of 100%. So effectively, it's a thick, you know, as far as space reservation perspectives go, type file, right?
Sure.
So with that being said, with you know, our failure tolerate of one, you know, in a mirrored config, we can consume a lot of space or reserve a lot of space that's just literally not used. And if we've got an environment that doesn't necessarily, you know, have any memory overcommitment issues where we're very, you know, running very, very small workloads, and don't and are properly sized memory-wise, then, you know, that's wasted space. So in the process of 6.2 being released and this advanced ESX CFG advanced config command, if you will, right, being introduced, you know, I thought about, you know, this is, again, back to the story of, you know, if I've got a large 10-node cluster or a 20-node cluster, or if I've got multiple clusters, and I want to ensure that, you know, that I enable this setting where a virtual swap file is much smaller, I decided to write a PowerShell script for it, right? Just to make it a little bit easy. Now, I will be honest, you know, I ran into Alan in Palo Alto, and he looked at it and he's like, oh, you could have done it a little bit better. And, you know, in my defense, you know, it's a simple script, and I'm quite a bit rusty when it comes to my PowerShell skills. I can't put a Z on the end of skills at the moment. Hopefully I'll get a lot better with that. But really the purpose of the script was just to make this one setting change, you know, across an entire cluster or multiple clusters or whatnot, right? And in a test environment, I had a, you know, 4-node cluster with 500 VMs with 4 gigs of unreserved RAM each, and I saved 4 terabytes of capacity. You know, as you go and you do, you know, upgrades and you know, bring hosts in, take hosts out, replace hosts, things like that, quite often that's one of those settings that you know, can get changed. So, you know, yet again, one of my scripts that I've got available is just one that literally will show the current status of whether that's enabled or not. We could roll that into the vCheck as well. You know, yeah, that type of thing.
You should.
Right. Yeah. So hopefully, again, you know, as I have a little bit more time now that we've got the 6.2 launch out of the way, I get a couple of the other deliverables out of my inbox, if you will. Hopefully, I can dive a good bit deeper into some of the capabilities that we've got, you know, from an API and PowerShell integration perspective with VirtualSAN, and maybe in, you know, a couple months, I'll get my Power CLI and PowerShell swagger back on and really impress the heck out of Alan, but. I don't know. Alan's... Hey,
you know what? your script did impress me. You know, don't put yourself down. I mean, what I always say is if your script does the job, then you've written it well. And you know, your script did the job, well, and you know, other people will find it useful. So
I'll argue there are some scripts out there that are pretty ugly that still work.
Yeah, I'm not saying they're all nice. I'm just saying, like, it did what you needed it to do, right? And that's the thing.
And hopefully, you know, as we do more from a virtual SAN perspective and maybe even virtual volume perspective, you know, it's important to know that we're going to try to get as much of this content out to, you know, to our customers and partners as we can. And, you know, we may not necessarily put together an entire solution as far as how to do this, that, or the other, but we're definitely going to put some information out specific to how you would go about doing it, right? And then you can take that and from a DevOps perspective, make it your own and do what you will with it, that type of thing.
I like it.
It's already exciting to see some of the stuff that's organically snuck out there, even without necessarily the greatest documentation. Dude, scripts are even like on the API access. Have you seen the sexy graph guys, what they've pulled off in terms of being able to monitor resync speeds and performance out of vSAN and pull that into their custom graphing system?
Oh, I haven't seen that. Sexy graph?
Yeah, it's one of the guys who brought you Sexy Log, which is basically just an Elk stack optimized around log analytics. This is really before Log Insight became a big thing, but it's called Sexy Graph. It's,
you know,
SEXI and then GRAF.
I've been seeing this Sexy Graph VM in people's environments, and I've been thinking, like, you know, that Brian Graf guy, he gets around. And people really think highly of him. So now I know what it is.
Well, you know, it's funny. I was talking with a customer just the other day, and we were talking about, you know, some of the capabilities with 6.2, you know, as far as, you know, with our API and what we're exposing, especially around performance and utilization metrics and that type of thing. And you know, I pointed the customer at Sexy Graph, and, you know, this was a WebEx, you know, all over the phone, and the room went silent when I said Sexy Graph. And the virtualization admin said, he said, all right, I'm going to take one for the team, and I'm going to, you know, and then it went blank, and someone said, "I think they're walking him out." and sure enough, they saw they took a look at it, and they saw a lot of value out of it. Right, so it was pretty interesting as far as that goes.
Yeah. So as well as those storage enhancements that I spoke about, we've also made some other changes. You know, minor changes, but ones that really, you know, make a difference. The first one is, I don't know if you've ever started any of the earlier versions of Power CLI, but whenever you do, it starts off in the folder where it was deployed. So normally that's about 6 folders deep, right? It's Power CLI, it's program files, VMware, right, infrastructure, Power CLI. And then you type the first command and it ends up line wrapping. And it's one of those nasty things that's like, okay, well, the first thing I do when I start Power CLI is do a CD backslash, right?
Yep.
So it's essentially what we made it do is start at C:\. You know, it's a small thing, but it sure makes a big difference to me.
Much cleaner.
Yeah, exactly. And then we also added the ability to work with the latest versions of vCloud Director, so VCD 8.0, and also Site Recovery Manager 6.1. So you can work with the latest and greatest products from VMware through our automation platform.
Have you added any new commandlets for SRM? I know you have the connecting and the disconnecting and all that, and I know you exposed the entire API, but have there been any new commandlets created for SRM?
We haven't at the moment, no. So there's some great work that's been done around that area. A guy called Ben Meadowcroft, who used to be the product manager for SRM, actually picked up the work that we'd done with Power CLI and SRM and created some of those higher level functions that I spoke about. If you probably search for Ben Meadowcroft SRM Power CLI, you'll come across his GitHub repo, where he's got a number of different modules that he's written and functions that he's written that allow you to abstract the lower level full API into some really useful commandlets. So, you know, things like Get Recovery Group, you know, Set Recovery Group, stuff like that. He's done a lot of the hard work. So he's done some awesome work there. You know, hopefully it's something we can build on in the future, and that we can create some high level commandlets for people to use. At the moment, I'm looking for feedback on those. So if you have them, or if your listeners have that, feel free to get in contact with.
Yeah, Ben's a product manager, but he's another one of those VMware product managers that blows my mind. He's like super, super techie. he's really a rock star.
Well, he's a fellow Brit, you know.
Oh, is that why? Okay.
We're a different caliber of PM.
I get it. Okay, we'll go with that. Should we go with all the stereotypes of the Brits, or should we just move on?
Let's move on.
Yeah. All right. Well, usually we end our podcast with some frequently asked questions. And so for the listeners out there, if you have any questions for future episodes, send those to podcast@vmware.com. We've got some episodes coming up around Virtual SAN, some episodes around Site Recovery Manager. And next week, we're going to be talking to a few of the product managers around both vSphere and Virtual Volumes as they demonstrate for customers the betas of the next releases in Palo Alto. So that should be fun. But yeah, we do have a few questions about Power CLI. And so, John, why don't you read off the first one?
So I did have one question from the community here. Dan Barr asks, will Power CLI ever natively see across vCenters that are in enhanced linked mode from a single VI server connection?
Nice. So first of all, I didn't realize this was like a live showing that we took requests from people. That's pretty awesome, right? and we've got somebody on line one. So yeah, the ability to hook into Virtual Center and realize it's in a linked mode environment and then all the information from those. That's a great question. So at the moment, we do have the ability through Power CLI in one session to connect to multiple virtual machines. But the way that you would do that is you would do a connect VI server and then you would list them, right? You'd do like VC1, VC2, VC3, VC4, and then your username and password, and it would connect to all of those. So when you ran the commandlets like get VM, it would actually give you a list of the consolidated virtual machines across all of those virtual centers. And you can obviously automate using that functionality as well. So we kind of give you that ability to work with multiple virtual centers, but I can't say for certain that we automatically know if a virtual center is part of a linked mode configuration and pick up those virtual centers to work with those. To be honest, I don't know if that works at the moment. It sounds from the question like it doesn't. And it's a great feature request, and it's certainly something I will be taking back and, you know, adding to our backlog and looking at in a future version if we don't already support that.
Yeah, that's one thing I really do love about the Power CLI, the whole process. You know, you basically pour all of the feature requests based on your feedback from VMworld, from all the different trade shows, from Twitter, from anywhere else. I mean, you really listen. It's great that we've got a product like Power CLI where people can actually have input and actually get features. And you guys are releasing features pretty frequently. What's the cadence on releases you guys have?
Yeah, generally we release twice a year, every 6 months, generally. You know, don't hold me to that. We could delay it by a month or two. It depends on what happens, when it happens. You know, we could be quicker in the 6.3 release that came out, you know, pretty much 3 weeks after the 6.2 release. So, wow. We really have no set cadence, but we try and work towards 6 months release cycles. You know, obviously, as we move towards modules, there's the potential to move a lot faster in that situation because we're not relying on a lot of the installation and the download issues that we have at the moment. If we could potentially move faster and upload the modules and it's easily consumable by people, then potentially we're going to do that. You know, it's something I would love to investigate.
Nice. One question before we go. I saw one of your sessions at VMworld last year where you did a demonstration using forking with the instant clones. And you did it with an engineer. I can't remember her name. But you guys demonstrated the whole process of using instant clones. And then you did it with, I think you did it with a fling, right, for the VM forking. Is that? And my favorite part was that with your British accent, you said it was forking awesome or something to that effect.
I had a ton of fun in that session with the forking phrase, you know, and it still is a fling. Absolutely right. So essentially what we've done is there's a new feature from VMware that's actually a private API in the 6.0 release. So there's no UI for this feature. It's there. You can't see it via UI. You can't see it via API. But what we've done is we've managed to bring out some Power CLI commandlets that take advantage of that private API. So, you know, instant clones is the ability to basically take a virtual machine, mark it as a parent, or it, you could think about it like a live template. So a template that's powered on, if you like. And then you can say, create me a bunch of children from this live template. And essentially what it does is it clones that template within a matter of milliseconds and brings up a already powered on virtual machine and then runs a customization script in it so that you can change things like, you know, the network ID or some of the specific application uniqueness or something like that, right? Yeah. So, and it has some great features, like it shares the memory space of the running the parent virtual machine. So if you have a bunch of children, it automatically shares the memory space of the parent. You know, if they're running the same applications, you've got all the copy on write features of the memory sharing. So there's a bunch of great enhancements that make these virtual machines very performant and instantaneous to start up. Now, I can already see the guys that are used to Vue, you know, seeing this as a way to spin up desktops really fast. And it really does enable that kind of next generation desktop and the ability to work with those. But there's a bunch of other use cases, particularly around the DevOps area, actually. You know, if you've got an application and you've got a VM already set up and you instantaneously produce, you know, 100 copies of this and they're all sharing the same memory space, they're all sharing the same disk space, then, you can get a pretty good performance on a host of, you know, running a lot of virtual machines. So essentially what we did is we released something called a Fling, which is a way for us to release a non-supported version of something from VMware. And we gave you some Power CLI commanders that enable you to work with instant clones so that you can actually test out this feature and start giving us feedback on how it works.
All right. One of the very few times that you want a Fling to result in having children.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah.
Awesome. All right. Well, those are all the questions I have. I really appreciate you coming on. Before we land this plane, John, Jace, do you guys have any questions or comments for Alan?
You know, I got to ask, what's your thoughts on the direction of the Ruby CLI?
Good question. So, you know, it's my job at VMware to try and consolidate the efforts that we have. So I come at it from a different perspective, you know. So I come at it from two different perspectives. The PM in me likes to think, you know what, we've got yet another solution that's going out that's non-standard, that confuses customers, that gives them, you know, another way to access a particular feature and another tool set to use for a particular feature that we offer from VMware. And then if you want to automate something else, you've got to break out in something completely different. So, you know, it's my job to try and standardize on the tools that we come out with so that when a customer wants to automate their infrastructure, they can actually do that throughout the tool set rather than breaking into these different environments. On the other hand, I like the fact that it's there. I like the fact that people can use another way to automate a feature, or, you know, the people that like Ruby, yeah, or the people that like RVC, I like the fact that it's there, and I like the fact that they can grab it and do more automation and use our tools in different ways. So I could go either way on that one.
Awesome. All right. Well, we've taken up way too much of your time. I want to thank both Jace and Alan for coming on the podcast and diving into the weeds with us about Power CLI as it pertains to storage and availability. Guys, hopefully you'll come back in future episodes and join us again.
Absolutely.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks for having us.
All right. Well, that music tells me it's time to go. And so if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. Subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes by going to Virtually Speaking Podcast. You can catch this and all other episodes at vspeakingpodcast.com. Next week, we're going to be in Palo Alto talking to some of the product managers about vSphere and Virtual Volumes beta versions. And so until next week, bye for now. All right, Alan, this is where you get up and do your dance for Power CLI.
Yeah, that ain't going to happen.
Come on, man. I got the video going. I can share it on YouTube.
No chance.
All right, Jace, your turn, man. Let's see what you got. Let's see your moves.
Not today. It's too late. I'm not on California time.
That was good.
Yeah, that was good fun.
Rule one of building the cloud: ruthlessly automate everything.
Oh, yeah.